Our first character is Adoniram Judson. And again, it feels almost immoral to try to cover such a great life in such a brief amount of time. Bodhiseth and I are going to try to do something like 40-40-40 with our three slots this evening. And as I studied Adoniram Judson again today, I was reminded that I was in the presence of one of the great giants of missions history. My notes right now are so hot off the press, I'm not touching them right now. And to give you a little idea of how I study for these biographies, I generally take the best book I can, the best single volume I can, and read it. And in this case, I did not do To the Golden Shore, which is by Courtney, and is considered the definitive biography of Adoniram Judson. Instead, I used The Three Mrs. Judsons. And this is the second time that I read through this book. And I'll read the introduction right here. This is to my wife. 4 years have passed. When I bought this book, I did not know at the time how long it would be before I gave it away. I bought it for the expressed intent of giving it to my wife. So, years passed as it collected dust on my bookshelf. I never opened it, afraid to damage the pages even a bit. On your 26th birthday, this book now becomes yours because in just a few days, you will become mine. You have the same resolve as these Judson wives, and I only pray that I will have a portion of the godly desire of their husband. Well, that was just a few days before our wedding, 13 years ago. And this has been an inspiring book for me. I read it many years ago, and then my wife read it, and then I read it again. So it is loaded with markings. And we are going to cover Adoniram Judson today. But before we do that, let's turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 1. Because I think Adoniram Judson is a great example of someone who brought joy to his parents after bringing great sorrow to his parents. Rebellion brings great shame to parents. Conversely, obedience brings them great joy. Proverbs 10:1 says, "A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is sorrow to his mother." Solomon knew from experience that rebellious children bring heartache. King Solomon had a son, and his son was disobedient to the wisdom his father had taught him. Imagine your father being the author of the greatest book on wisdom ever written. Well, the father of a rebel has no joy. The disobedience that a child partakes in brings great pain to the parents. And so Solomon, in this passage, is urging children to be wise. And if you're wise, it will make your father happy and it will make your father proud. Do you remember the prodigal son? The prodigal son disrespected his father by asking for his inheritance early. He wasn't just asking for money. He was basically saying, "I wish you were dead. And because you're not dead yet, I can't wait till you're dead. So I want my inheritance now." Of course, he wasted his money with wicked friends and wild parties. His father was crushed with grief. But when the father saw his boy returning in shame and tattered clothes, he ran with love and joy and received him. What that teaches us on earth is that just as rebellion brings great sorrow to parents, joy brings them, obedience brings them great joy. We'll see an example of this in this man right here, Adoniram Judson. Now, there's a danger in trying to cull the very, very best portions of books, because there are times that you just need a little break. It's kind of like giving someone only dessert. If you give them only dessert, you almost feel like, I just need a little break where I need something normal to enjoy the dessert. So I hope I'm not giving you only dessert, but I am telling you now that to cover his life in just this short span is not justice. I am leaving out quote upon quote, story upon story, example upon example in the life of Judson. I hope this just whets your appetite to read more about Judson for yourself. Well, let's talk about his name, Adoniram. Have you ever met an Adoniram before? What's with that name? Well, it is a strange name. Adoniram is a Bible name. Adoniram was a building manager for King Solomon in 1 Kings 5:14. But today, the name Adoniram is most commonly associated with the first great missionary from the United States. In fact, on the very first page of this book, it says, besides Old Hickory. Does anyone know who Old Hickory?
Jackson.
Yes, Jackson, who was one of the presidents of the United States. The author says, in the day of Adoniram Judson, besides Andrew Jackson, the president of the United States, there was no one more popular in the United States than Adoniram Judson. He was a hero. Even though he spent 30 plus years on the mission field and only returned one time. His exploits in Burma captured the attention of those in the United States. So when I say the name is most commonly associated with the first great missionary, perhaps I can say then most people, even Christians today, don't know who Adoniram Judson is. Well, like the man in the Bible, Adoniram was also a builder. But he was not a builder of houses made with hands, but instead was employed as a servant to the King of Kings as he was building his church in pagan lands far away. Adoniram Judson was born on August 9th, 1788, just a few years after the founding of the United States of America. Judson's father's name was Adoniram Sr. And Adoniram Sr. was a preacher in the state of Massachusetts. He had a strong belief in God's sovereign control over all things, and he was a godly pastor. Judson could read the Bible by age 3. In fact, the story was told to surprise the father. He was taught how to read, and at age 3, he read a portion of the Bible to his father. And this was an early sign already of his incredible gift for languages. When he was 5 years old, he liked to pretend to preach like his pastor and father. Well, Judson was so brilliant that at the age of 16, he went off to college And he said, hey, who needs to be a freshman your first year? I'll just skip the first year and start my second year since I've already mastered all of my first year classes. And so he went right to his second year. But when he arrived at the school, he was immediately inundated with teachings contrary to the Bible that had not been taught in his home, especially by a friend of his named Jacob Eames. And Jacob Eames, along with other professors at the school, started teaching him about a particular doctrine known as deism. What is deism? Well, deism is the belief that God is the creator, but though he's the creator, he doesn't want to get his hands dirty with the things of the world. So he kind of winds the clock up and then he just lets it go. He keeps his hands off of the day-to-day affairs of men on earth. And so Judson was embracing the idea of deism to his father's disgust, to his father's anger, or maybe we can say he embraced it because his father was angry and disgusted. In some ways, even though Judson was living in rebellion, life was good. By age 19, Judson had graduated as valedictorian of his class. And a year later, he even published books on grammar and mathematics. But he wasn't happy because he knew that he was straying from the teachings of the Bible and from the teachings of his father. He knew he was deceiving his parents, and so he decided to leave for the big city. And soon he fell into sinful living with wicked friends. Well, one night, as he was traveling, he stopped at a roadside inn, at a lodge, to spend the night there. And throughout the night, he heard the groans and the cries and the screams of a young man dying in the next room. This man was not only in misery physically, but he was miserable emotionally as well. The next day, as Judson got ready to leave, he was told that the young man had died. The young man's name was Jacob Eames. This was a turning point in Judson's life. Here was his college buddy, his college friend, who told him to cast off the teachings of the Bible, to live footloose and fancy free, and now he was dead. Judson was soon converted. He enrolled at his father's new Bible school, and he soon thereafter volunteered to become America's first foreign missionary in 1810. Well, that same year, a deacon's daughter named Anne Hasselton caught his eye at a dinner party. Within weeks, he wrote the following letter to her father asking for his daughter's hand in marriage. No wasting time, right? And as I read a portion of this letter, I would like to remind you that he did not sugarcoat anything. Imagine you writing a letter like this, trying to convince the woman's father that you want to marry, her father, to give you permission to marry. Listen to what he says. Quote, "I have now to ask whether you can consent to part with your daughter early next spring, to see her no more in this world. Whether you can consent to her departure for a heathen land and her subjection to the hardships and sufferings of a missionary life. Whether you can consent to her exposure to the dangers of ocean, to the fatal influence of the southern climate of India, to every kind of want and distress, to degradation, insult, persecution, and perhaps a violent death. Can you consent to all this for the sake of him who left his heavenly home and died for her and for you? For the sake of perishing immortal souls, for the sake of Zion and the glory of God, can you consent to all this in hope of soon meeting your daughter in the world of glory? With a crown of righteousness, brightened by the acclamations of praise, which shall redound to her Savior from heathens saved through her means from eternal woe and despair. The father consented. Amazing. Didn't hide anything. He said, this is what you're getting. And it's glorious to give your daughter for this journey. Well, during the year before their marriage, Judson was asked to travel to England to raise support for the mission. As he's sailing across the ocean, he's captured by a French naval ship and he's thrown in prison in France. Somehow he escapes from the French prison. He travels on foot to London and he still is able to raise support from the Mission Society there. The next year, in 1812, he and Anne, after their marriage, set sail for India. Now they're on the voyage again. And while they're on the voyage, they decide to study a particular doctrine. Now, this is not unusual for them. In fact, even later on in their journals, they talked about as a team, one of the things they liked to do was assign a particular topic early in the week, and they would all study that particular topic. And then at the end of the week, they would all come together with their notes and they would discuss that particular topic. So they just loved the Bible. They loved studying the Bible. And they said, what we're going to do is we're going to study baptism. Now, the Judsons were not Baptists. They were Congregationalists, which means they baptized babies. But they knew that when they got to India, there was lots of Baptists there, including Carey, Ward, and Marshman, who we're going to talk about in a moment. They said, hey, we have to be prepared when we talk to the Baptists. So let's study baptism so we can arm ourselves. Be careful when you study the Bible. Because when they study baptism, they said, the Bible doesn't teach infant baptism. It teaches believers' baptism. And they became Baptists on the voyage to India. Maybe our voyages to the mission field these days are too brief. On a 15-hour flight, it's not easy to change your theological position on extraordinary things. And by the way, don't think he was changing his position lightly. He was losing his mission board. He was losing friends. He was losing support. This was a huge decision. Both he and his wife separately came to the same conclusion about believers' baptism. Well, 4 months later, they arrive in Calcutta and they're greeted by the famed Serampore Trio, often considered the greatest missionary team ever assembled. William Carey, Joshua Marshman, and William Ward. I think it was Marshman who actually baptized them. It was either Ward or Marshman. Well, tragedy struck immediately because the Judsons were traveling with teammates. And one of the wives of his beloved teammate, who was just 19 years old, died very soon after arriving of tuberculosis. And this was just weeks after their infant child had died. Soon thereafter, the Judsons' first child was born, stillborn. Then the Indian officials demanded that the Judsons return to America immediately. They said, "You're not wanted here." Well, now they're terrified. They said, "This can't be. We've taken years planning. We studied language. We changed our denomination. We can't do this. We've got to find a way out." Well, there's all kinds of dangerous adventures that I'm going to skip over: missing this boat, getting on this boat, not having the money, someone giving them permission to get on this ride, losing sight of each other, and finally, they are able to arrive at the country of Burma. Judson was a missionary, not to India, but to Burma, which is modern-day Myanmar. Burma borders to the west is India, and then to the north is Nepal, and then to the northeast is China. Burma was a very, very difficult place. It was then, as it still is largely today, a closed Buddhist country. It was under a brutal, oppressive king that hated the work of missionaries. In fact, Carey urged Judson not to be a missionary in Burma. The land was filled with idols, and they knew nothing of the Savior, Jesus Christ. They had all kinds of barbaric customs, like blackening their teeth. And they said, "What? Should we have white teeth like a dog or monkey?" This was the place that they chose to give their lives to. Well, the Judsons immediately began learning the language, and they learned the language under incredibly difficult circumstances. 3 years after arriving, their infant son, Roger, died of a fever. The parents wrote this: "We felt he was our earthly all, our only source of innocent recreation in this heathen land, but God saw it was necessary to remind us of our error and strip us of our little all." The few Burmese books that they could actually obtain were not made of paper. They were made of palm leaves. And the writing on the palm leaves was stamped with a kind of iron pen, which means there wasn't even ink. But the Judsons kept on persisting. They started out by publishing two little tracts. It was the first printing that had ever taken place in Burma. And on top of that, Judson set out working and translating the Bible as well as an English-Burmese dictionary. And 7 years after arriving, their first convert was baptized, Mao Now. Well, one day Judson stood before the king to present him a beautiful tract that he had translated. He had written it. He made sure it was ornate because it was in the presence of the king, and they had planned for some time how to present this tract just perfectly to the king. And it was entitled "A Summary of Christian Doctrine." And the king took the tract, he looked at the first two lines, and he threw it on the ground. The Judsons were heartbroken. In fact, they were so discouraged that they said, "That's it. We're done with this place. We're going somewhere else. I can't take this anymore. We're leaving Rangoon, which is on the southeastern side of Burma, and we're going to find another place of ministry." But that night, their three Burmese disciples begged them not to leave. They said, "Please don't go. We'll do anything. Please don't leave. We need you here." And they prevailed upon them until finally the Judsons decided to remain. And within weeks, the number of their converts doubled. Well, Anne became so ill that she returned to America for 2 years. And she was an excellent writer. I wish I could just include paragraphs of her writing. It's beautiful, it's moving, it's inspiring. But she published an account of their mission in Burma. She originally went to London. In fact, she was planning on going to America, and it was too expensive to go to America. So she said, "I'm just not going to go. I'm so sick, but I can't go." So then someone said, "Well, it's actually much cheaper if you go to London. It's a third of the price, and the only catch is you have to live in a cabin with three little children." She said, "I'll do it." Then the children's father paid for it, so she ended up going to London for free, and then she ended up going to America. And she started writing and writing and writing this book, and it was very well received and widely acclaimed. She once wrote this: "How much of heaven might Christians enjoy even here on earth if they would but make the enjoyment of God their main pursuit?" Well, when she finally returned 2 years later to Burma, the suffering continued. There was a war that broke out between Burma and England. Now remember, Judson is not British. He's American. He should have nothing to worry about. But they just saw him as a foreigner, and they said, "Ah, we know who you are. You're a spy. You are a British spy." And they threw him in jail. One of the longest sections in the book is covering the terrible conditions that he endured during this imprisonment. He was thrown into a place called the Death Prison, and he was there for 18 months, and during that time, he was tortured. Sometimes he was in a small room of 50 men, and sometimes 100 men. They were shackled to the wall. They had very little ventilation and very little to eat. At night, his feet were bound to a bamboo pole, which was lifted above his head so that he was required to sleep with only his head and shoulders on the ground. If it wasn't for his wife, Anne, who was constantly bribing the prison guards to allow her to give him some food, and if she wasn't for her constant pleas to certain officials to allow him to come out and get some ventilation, he certainly would have died. There were times that she was so ill that she actually gave birth to an infant while he was in prison. And she couldn't even nurse the baby. And she was almost to the point of death that he was given special permission to come out of his jail cell, take the baby, and walk through the streets and finding another nursing mother to nurse the child. Page after page after page after page of this kind of torture. He's finally released after 18 months only because at this point in the war, they needed a translator between the Burmese and the English, and they chose Judson. Well, Anne, now, who had kept her husband alive for so long, could not survive the toll of this suffering. Her head was shaved. Leeches were put on her skull and on her feet. But it was too late. She soon died and was followed in death by her infant daughter, Maria, 6 months later. Judson hastened on through much more suffering and bouts of depression. I want to read you this little part that describes Anne Judson talking about how to get her husband out of prison. In just a very, very small way, I can relate with this, but this is just one page of the moving texts. She's now going to speak to the queen of the ruthless king to somehow get permission. She received particular marks of her favor, but now times were altered. Mr. Judson was in prison, and I in distress was a sufficient reason for giving me a cold reception. So she said, normally you had to have all kinds of different permission, but you know what? I didn't care. I had to get my husband out of prison. I took a present of considerable value. So here they are, poor. They've already had their silver and their clothing and many of their possessions removed. The guards came one night into the room. They beat up Adoniram, shackled him, took him away, and basically took all their possessions. Somehow she found a present, she says, of considerable value to present to them to convince them to release her husband from prison. She, that is the wife, the sister-in-law of the queen, was lolling or relaxing on her carpet as I entered with her attendants around her. I waited not for the usual question to a suppliant, what do you want? But in a bold, earnest, yet respectful manner stated our distress and our wrongs and begged her assistance. Now picture this. Your husband is being tortured in prison. And as you enter, the person who may have the authority to remove your husband from prison is relaxing lazily on the couch. And you have tears in your eyes, essentially. She partly raised her head, opened the present I had brought, and coolly replied, "Yours is not the only case. All the foreigners are treated alike. But it is unusual," said I. "The teachers are Americans. They're not English. They are ministers of religion and Christianity. They have nothing to do with war or politics, and came to this city, Ava, in obedience to the king's command. They have never done anything to deserve such treatment, and it is right that they should be treated thus. Is that right?" Answer: "The king does as he pleases." And then again, "I'm not the king, what can I do?" Again, imagine this now, Anne. "What can you do? You can state their case to the queen and obtain their release. Place yourself in my situation. Were you in America and your husband, innocent of crime, thrown into prison in irons, and you a solitary, unprotected female, what would you do?" With a slight degree of feeling, she said, "I'll present your petition. Come again tomorrow." I returned to the house with considerable hope that the speedy release of the missionaries was at hand, but the next day, essentially, it didn't happen. Now that is just one small page of just a paragraph of anxiety. Imagine 400 pages over decades of that kind of anxiety. And he hastened on. And he didn't quit. And he kept on going. Well, years later, he married again. He married a widow named Sarah Borman, who was the wife of a missionary to the Karens in Burma named George Borman. And her husband was such a great missionary that I'm really not going to tell you anything about him because he deserves his entire own biography. He was an amazing man and died at 29 years old, and she didn't leave. In fact, when he died, Judson, who had lost his wife, wrote to her, that is Sarah, a very moving letter of sympathy, saying, essentially, I understand what you're going through. It will get better. Is there anything I can do to help financially? And he even says, your son George, she had a young son George, and she said, if you should want to send him to a boarding school in America, I'm happy to do whatever I can to make sure he's in a comfortable place in America. But if you feel as though you can't care for him, I will care for him and I will raise him as my own son. Several years later, they were married and it was a beautiful marriage. But in time, she died as well. Judson married again, this time to a woman named Fanny Forrester, who was a famous writer of that day. She was a faithful wife to Judson, and she even wrote the biography of Judson's second wife, Sarah, if you can imagine that. By the end of his astonishing life, Judson had established 63 churches among the Karen tribe in Burma. Over 100,000 Karen people had been baptized. The Karen people in Burma have remained faithful in their Christian faith despite severe persecution. And it is an island of Christianity, even today, in a sea of Buddhism. Judson worked in Burma for 38 years until his death at age 61. He only returned to America once, 33 years after arriving on the field. Now, I want to close with this statement. I thought about this as I again studied the life of Edna Erm Judson. There may be more missionary tales that are more inspiring than Edna Erm Judson. Maybe. Livingston, Peyton, Hudson Taylor. But it is difficult to find an account filled with more suffering and more sorrow and more self-sacrifice than the life of Adoniram Judson. Judson once wrote, "There is no success without self-sacrifice. If you succeed without sacrifice, it is because someone has suffered before you. And if you sacrifice without success, it is because someone will succeed after." Well, Hudson Taylor, John Peyton, David Livingston, Robert Moffat are all great missionaries, certainly on the Mount Rushmore of great missionaries, but I do believe that Edna Erm Judson must be on that list as well. And I would encourage you to further study this amazing life of self-sacrifice.